forgotten. I think box music, because it's so valued and appreciated, it has just transcended like any racial definition. Like now it just, music can transcend things and just mean things in general, no matter who produces it. For example, like Bach, you said refinement. Okay, Bach means refinement. A rapper uses Bach in a sample because he wants to show that he has refinement, like, or they have taste, or refinement, or they have wealth, right? But, still works.
But what about if you want to play black music and you want to have that dangerous taint, that sort of criminal taint that is associated with that kind of music? What's the difference between that and refinement?
I wouldn't necessarily say it's... I'd probably more use the words like... I wouldn't say it's dangerous or criminal. I don't know if exactly.
What is it then? If it's, I mean, all the swear words and the sort of... I mean, a lot of it. Not all, but a lot of that music seems to be quite dark, isn't it? Or you know, death and this and that. I mean, compare that with Bach. There's not much about death in there. Except maybe in the operas. But.
Yeah, well... I mean, because... It is because there is a double standard, but it's one that keeps society, that keeps groups from completely stealing. Like you don't want to find that people who are taking what makes you, you, and just reappropriating it and making a bastardization of it.
Would you say that this is a larger societal problem than just... a particular culture wanting to steal another culture?
No, it's,
I mean, it seems like it's related to a loss of culture and perhaps... Right. I mean, what makes...
It's
what causes
it's the loss of culture that it really... People don't want to lose their culture because diversity is a spice of life. And that culture is what makes them. But when people threaten to take it away from them... Like, for example, Native Americans. Like, white people when they were... Americans when they were, you know... making bloodshed through the West. They took... They reoriented Native Americans and forced them to adopt settler ways and all this stuff, and stealing culture.
So what about just looking at sort of like what it's associated with, the value of keeping culture? Do you think it's good for the black culture to be retained by the African community to the extent... that it is so associated with pain and so full of... I mean, the music is so full of obscenity and death and blood and... I mean, do you think that's a good way of trying to escape, trying to sort of go beyond slavery and go beyond segregation by sort of grabbing onto in that sense?
Well, I mean, the themes of pain and death and blood are universal no matter what human being you are. Like, you saw, like, there was white emo rappers, and that's just because teen angst... and being emotional and having problems like suicide and depression are not relative to one race's experience. They're human qualities.
So, but if it's universal, then you're saying that a little tiny sort of taste of various cultures is injected, and that's what you're sort of objecting to, even though the overlying issues are universal? That it's, what is it in this culture that you dislike when you have a white rapper? What is it?
Well, no, it's just, I guess it's just like, what I mean, it's also because generally, like, white rappers don't represent... Well, actually, can you rephrase your question? I think that...
Well, I'm just wondering, or I'll go back. I was just thinking, what is so... I'm just wondering sort of why it is that it's bad for this particular culture to be appropriated by whites. I mean, I don't particularly like it at all. But I'm just wondering, doesn't that association sort of... Isn't that sort of desegregation to a certain extent? But also, if you think that it's important for the black culture to be kept excluded, do you think that's a good thing?
It's not exclusivity in, like, it's like you have one and then the other. I think it's, you respect one, you can live through one, but not necessarily, you can't necessarily like be one. It's like trying
to. But is that possible to be exposed to a thing? I mean, humans seem to be very, very, they're very adaptable creatures, and they're also influenced by their environment. So if you are exposed to rap music, isn't there a good chance that you're going to be influenced by it? I mean, how can you have it coming from a particular kind of person,
right,
and not emulate it? Well, I mean, would you say that we should ban it all in no. general? Because how can we somehow do this, separate it, see, make people not emulate it?
Well, there's not a problem with emulate. Like, there's white rappers like Eminem who have taken the sound of rap but have paid respect to older artists, but have made their own sound. I think it's when there's nothing stopping a white guy from rapping about the same things, but it's honestly like, okay, well, that's a little serious, but like, why, like, you can't, like, a white rapper can't say the N-word, because that's racist. You can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Mm-hmm. It's not part of you. You are taking something that, like, you're taking a word that, like, is essentially, when a white person says it, like, when a black person says the N-word, they're essentially taking, sucking the poison out of it. But when a white person says it, they're spitting it back in.
Mm. What do you think is going to occur if all of these words are taboo? I mean, it seems like often when a word is taboo, it becomes a point of controversy.
Right.
Of course, but like with the word, you know, the F word, for instance, if that word were not tabooed, I doubt that I would shout it when I'm in pain. I mean, if someone said, never say dog, never say it. If you ever say it, I'll punish you.
Right.
I would probably shout dog. So do you think it's healthy to ban these words and ban this culture? Or do you think that that simply exacerbates the segregation, exacerbates all of the terrible things that it has represented in the past and still does?
Well, I think that, I mean, if you, I don't know, it's just, I wouldn't, like, the F word has a meaning that is not related to one race. It means,
well, I think it's a Saxon word,
but,
and it has a specifically offensive meaning.
Right, but, like, the idea of that word is not, like, ow, fuck. Am I allowed to swear?
What?
Am I allowed to swear?
Maybe not.
Okay, alright. Ow, F word, right? You can't, it doesn't have a, it's a universal idea. But other racial slurs, they, you can't, because they have specific meanings. And either, I think that none of it should be okay. Personally.
So, but I mean, okay, but think about it this way. What about the prohibition
right.
in America? That really failed.
Right.
Big time. So, do you really think that by prohibiting these words, these bad words, do you think that's going to solve the problem?
It's not, well, no, because,
I mean, I feel like whatever is most forbidden is always kind of a magnet for people. People who feel suppressed in some way, oppressed, right. They're poor, they want to go right to the painful part, and the painful part is what they're forbidden to do. They want to commit sacrilege, essentially. But if you let them commit sacrilege, if you have a sacrilegious point, won't that sort of provoke it to be sort of attacked?
I think it's, well, I mean, it's not really sacrilegious, because I don't know, I just, it just doesn't make, why is it sacrilegious again?
Well, it seems like, well, the N-word, right. You were saying that is something that we should prohibit, essentially, right? And right. All these words prohibit them.
And
I'm
you're
just,
saying that
I'm
people
just,
will say more.
It seems, well, it just seems like in historically, those things that have been prohibited have not succeeded in
right.
being eradicated. So, I don't know, do you think that is valid, or do you think there's some other solution?
Well,
or
it's because it's like not like everybody can't say it. Like, black people are like, can say it, right?
Mm-hmm.
I can't say because I'm a white person, but like, it's not that it's prohibited, but like, you're always going to get some middle school, edgy middle schooler idiot who's going to say the N-word, like some 14-year-old white kid who will say the N-word. But the thing is, like, I think if we focus on healing and change the culture towards a certain, like, prohibition didn't work because the culture was, alcohol was a huge part of the culture and they just got rid of it immediately. Hello. But I think if you just get rid of words like that, it's kind of like, you know, like we've been slowly developing culture to the point where it becomes like, it's like, you know, like we've been developing culture to the point where it's not okay to say that. So yeah, I don't know. And honestly, these are very complex issues that I do not really have a say in, honestly.
But you are part of the culture, aren't you? I mean, this is your culture in a certain extent.
Well, yeah. Well, because I identify with it. It's like, are you talking about like emo rap?
I just mean this whole culture of taboo words. I mean, let me just give you another. I'll give you an anecdote.
Okay.
When I was a young child, a friend of mine told me the F word and said to me it's a bad word. And one day I was angry at someone and I shouted the word. And I had no idea what it meant.
Right.
It was only because that person had told me how bad it was. And, you know, people say it when they're angry. And so I said it.
Right.
So I'm just wondering, isn't that similar to tabooing words that we today very much prohibit?
Yeah, but also, like, you just have to take the scale of your example. Like, you're talking about, like, 150 years of slavery to use stubbing your toe. Like, the scale is much different on which the words
are. It is, but I know, of course, but I'm just wondering the cause of this importance given to these words so that they are said. The meaning of a word isn't somehow inherent. I don't think it's sort of abstracted from the society in which it exists. I think it's very connected. But what do you think? Do you think, because Ross has been talking about how there are certain words like the N-word that he thinks we should essentially prohibit. And so I'm wondering, if we look back on periods when words have been prohibited, like, you know, alcohol, prohibiting alcohol, that it seems like the prohibition doesn't really fix the problem. If you just try to, if you do some sort of systemic change, it might fix the problem, but if you just try to just block it off, that doesn't solve anything. What do you think?
Well, I remember when I was told that that words like stupid or terms like shut up were bad words. But I mean, I do agree that there is a history that's sort of inescapable with the N-word. But then there's also the question is when we say it's prohibited to who? I mean, I think it's perfectly fair.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, he was saying let the black population say it, but not the white population.
Yeah, I think that's perfectly fair. By the same token, I can use the K word.
Right.
But you know, like,
wait, what's the K word? Or
I don't know if I want to say it.
Oh, spell it out.
No.
Okay. Never mind. All right. Forget it. But really, you think that is a solution? I mean, you think that's something... exacerbate things? Because it seems like the angriest people, like I was saying, they're going to want to attack what is prohibited and sacrilegious. And sort of sacristan.
One thing before... You should probably tell... What is your name?
Simon.
It's good to meet you, Simon.
Good to meet you. What's your name?
Ross.
Sorry,
I'm Ross.
Ross. Sorry. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. We were talking about how... Like, I showed him, like, some rap videos that are, like, popular today, and then we're talking about, I was like, you mentioned how, like, there's an issue with white people stealing black culture, and I was like, yes, to a degree that's true, that when white artists use hip-hop, like, people feel that they are stealing the culture, and I think that is true, that white people do steal hip-hop culture, and then you were like, oh, well, we can't ban it, because you have to you still want people to, like, white people can still listen to it.
Well, I was just wondering, how do you...
And then it escalated from there.
Well, how do you create a separation? Like, is it good to ban a part of society from singing a particular way? Hmm. Or because in that sense, it seems to increase the segregation, in a sense. Ross was saying that it's disrespectful to pretend to be poor and things like that. Hmm. But I'm just wondering... Is that the case, do you think?
Well, so I think that a lot of the times when we think about cultural appropriation, there's always the possibility that it doesn't have to be appropriative. Now, with music, there's a really long and kind of torrid history of black music being used by white people, and like jazz, rock and roll, and all so many music... The blues, for God's sake, like what do you even have to be blue about? And so there's that history. But there's also a mistake in thinking that any time that something that comes from one culture can't be merged with things from another culture. Like, we have to think about... No, we don't have to think. But it would be great if we could think about cultural syncretism as a positive thing. I might have said the word wrong, but I mean, exchanges between cultures, they get messy, and
that's sort of what I was thinking about. Is it a healthy component of relationships between two cultures to hermetically seal them, or will this sort of provoke issues similar to the N-word?
I mean, there's a right and like a wrong, and I think it's just depending on what your influence, like what you're trying to emulate. This is what you do. Like, yes, you can merge cultures and it can be a healthy thing, but also there's times when we know when it morally goes too far. So like let's say a poor person and a rich person go to the same college, and like this rich person, you know, like dresses and acts in a certain way that undermines the experience of like this poor person, because like you can act, I was saying, like, you can act, like, street smart or tough, but, like, you're not exactly, like, you didn't live that life.
Yeah.
You don't know what that is. So, like, you can, I think that there's a line between respecting it, stepping into other people's shoes, and helping them, but also then just taking what they say and just devaluing it.
Oh, yeah, that's a huge problem here in Hampshire. Lots of fake poor folks. Fake being, you know, rich people who pretend that they're...
So, all right, but wait. What about a case, is it good, what about this instance of, like, the importance of keeping the culture? Do you think that's healthy for relations between blacks and whites to have the blacks keep their culture, to hang on to the past? Do you think it's a good thing to remember the past? Or do you think that's going to slow down a shift away from this relationship, to be so associated with this particular culture of oppression, or to just drop it by the wayside and move on, because Ross is talking about the importance of a culture, that you should, you know, they should have this culture exclusive to them because it's their culture, it's important. But I'm wondering, do you think that's a healthy thing, or do you think that's something that it's actually sort of a poison that should be tried to, you know, move on?
Well, generally, identity politics don't have to be individualized. Yeah. Stop ringing that bell. I'm not ringing it. I'm probably not going to ring it on May 2nd when I'm supposed to. But the thing about identity politics is that it can be a form of collective struggle, which can be very important. It can also sort of be broken up into individuals who sort of define themselves by their identities, and it can be counterproductive when it's too individualized. I don't know if that really gets to the heart of your question or not, but it's just sort of another.
Well, why don't you give it a try, Ross? Do you think this is? Did you hear my question?
No, I did, and I think that there's an importance. It's remembering like a cultural identity, but also like a willingness to learn others and to experience others and to apply them to your own and to apply theirs to yours. Mm-hmm. And there's, but like remembering, like, for example, like if I go to Japan, mm-hmm. and like I really end up really liking Japanese culture and I want to incorporate more of Japanese culture into my life, right? That's okay, because I can have a healthy appreciation and respect for the culture. But when I start, oh, I don't know, doing things that might be offensive, like start impersonating Japanese people without actually recognizing the history and importance, and that it's their history, that I did not, it's not my experience. You know, it's like, that's where I think it can become a problem.
So it's one thing to speak Japanese, and it's another thing to put on a Japanese accent. Possibly while speaking English in a broken up,
right, kind of a way. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
So what about this? Would you be against the idea of cosmopolitanism?
What is that?
It's this idea where essentially you sort of transcend nations and, you know, the sort of hermetically sealed nature of nations, and you basically become one world. Not a nation, because a nation includes sort of exclusion, but just a whole population, which is sort of one culture. Do you think it's good to retain the sort of heterogeneous nature of cultures across the globe, or do you think we should have some sort of all-encompassing, all-embracing oneness, well, like Babel, for instance?
The spice of life, like, that's kind of what, diversity is kind of what makes, I don't know, is what makes humanity humanity. And there's nothing wrong with having different cultures. Mm-hmm. You know, you can still live together and have a different culture. Like, I can live next to my, I don't know, French neighbor, and I'm totally cool with them. And we have experiences together, but then we also come from two different places. But the fact that we can have experiences together is what makes it so great. And it which makes, I don't know, the humanities, anthropology is what makes it all interesting.
It's also, I don't see those two things as mutually exclusive. I mean, I think the whole cosmopolitanism isn't everybody eating cheeseburgers like a restaurant near the Swiss Alps with a Burger King or something. It's these different cultures existing, interacting and coexisting on their terms, but also in a wider community.
But what I just think is if you have interaction between cultures, you're inevitably going to have a decrease in the sort of purity of their cultures. I mean, you speak of anthropology. I mean, one thing with anthropology is it creates a fascination with other cultures, which very well leads to more emulation and more sort of destruction of cultures. You know, you have some uncontacted tribe in Africa or the Amazons, and a white man comes in. What does that do to their culture?
That is pretty. You want to take a stab at that?
Well, it's just kind of funny because I'm coming here from my ethnography class. I think that I actually had a friend who was studying ethnography more than anthropology more than I was. And I said, hey, wouldn't it be easier if you could just wear a pith helmet and write a 20-page paper instead of a 400-page paper? And I think
I'm sorry, what's a pith helmet?
A pith helmet is like a British imperial like thing to block out the sun. But I think that the fact that you can't do that, and the fact that you really do have to write a lot about who you are in relation to everything else, what your positionality is, and also there's more of a push for, I mean, this one of the flaws in anthropology is this idea that you only can study the other, but I think there's a push away from that, mm-hmm. and there are more people who say Egyptians who are studying Egyptians instead of British Egyptologists, actual people studying their own culture and their own histories. Mm. And I think that's a very positive development. And there was one guy who was working with, he was working with indigenous people in Ecuador. And he started out as, you know, the white anthropologist who went there. And then he wound up helping to pay for indigenous people to go to school to learn anthropology so that they could carry on the work.
Mm-hmm.
And so that doesn't necessarily involve fetishizing this other group, mm-hmm. or you know, observing. I'm sorry, I'm talking way too much.
No, not at all. But now here's another question. What about the sort of moral component of the influence of cultures upon other cultures? For instance, if you have some custom that is seemingly unhealthy, they eat unhealthy food or something of that sort, is it a moral obligation? It's very imperialistic, of course, to sort of pretend to do this, you know, taming the savage and all this, but is that a moral obligation to sort of invade upon... Ross, what about this?
Yeah.
Is it a moral obligation to invade upon another culture if their culture is physically detrimental to them? I mean, going back to maybe a small tribe somewhere, if they, you know, they drink bad water, is it important to go into their culture and drill a well for them? Or should you leave them alone and let them retain their culture?
Well... I guess if preservation is of an absolute importance, then you have to.
Have to what?
Well, I mean, if you think about it, you have to go and fix their water supply, but you'll change their culture forever. I guess is the dilemma that you're.
So, but what would you do if you were the West? And you could make a choice. What would it be?
I would change the water supply, only because you don't want this. Sure, you change this culture forever, but what's stopping you from changing it and then leaving it alone again?
So you think that you can change it and it will go back to normal?
No, it will never go back to normal. It will have a new definition. But you can. They won't forget everything they've learned just by Western influence. They'll keep retaining some things. I should probably step aside because I gotta send a text to one person. So,
nice to meet you, Ross. Hope to see you soon.
Wait, are you gonna be back? You're coming back.
Which is why I said see you soon.
Oh,
very soon.
All right, what do you think about this?
Well, so it's a very interesting question, and I mean, it calls to mind the British abolishing Sudi, but the water example is very interesting. Because oftentimes what you have is the opposite situation, like in Honduras, where you have so many rivers that were pristine, and that, I mean, maybe that's the wrong word to use, but people were getting water from rivers in Honduras and in Ecuador, and then the oil companies came in, sometimes private, sometimes state oil companies. And like in Ecuador, you had a left government sending in these state oil companies, and completely ruining the water supply. But I think the key is, like, let's say that isn't the situation, and the West or the Global North, or that they have a choice between making the water supply better and not. It's a choice that they should make with the help of the people there. Like, it's sort of like, would you like us to help you technically with the water supply or with this? And indigenous people don't necessarily want to live in this static present that always goes on. I mean, that's sometimes what tourists want them to do more than what indigenous people want to do. But I think it really, even then, it's a choice that indigenous people can make to ask for technical assistance, to ask for assistance with water, for instance. When it comes to Sudi, that's a really hard question. It's a much harder question when we're talking about like a practice that involves widows jumping into fires before the British were in India. So I'm sorry, I'm talking way too much.
No, that is interesting. But what about this sort of moral component of aiding people, give them water so that the, you know, the mortality rates drop? People live longer.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a moral question? Because it seems like, for instance, the length of life is very relative. I mean, I think, you know, 100 years ago, or 200 years ago,
mm-hmm.
our life, you know, the expectancy was far lower. So now it's a moral obligation to spread our special knowledge that makes us live a bit longer.
Mm.
Is that an obligation? Is that a good thing? I mean, can someone be sad about dying younger if they don't know that anyone dies any older?
I think it's a moral obligation when people want it and when we have the capacity to help. When it's wanted, I think it can definitely be a moral obligation. Our ideas of development aren't necessarily everyone else's. But it's very interesting because I've been trying to do research on how many preventable deaths there are a year, partly from lack of access to drinking water, lack of access to vaccines. And I haven't found perfect figures. Like, it was only for the year 2002. But I think that when you take all of those things into account, it was around 9 million people dying globally. And that's after we've made progress. So if progress is 9 million preventable deaths a year, there's something fundamentally wrong.
Wait, so sorry, the progress caused it?
No. Rather, it used to be higher. That we've brought those figures down, but even in 2002, it was as high as 9 million people. And that's not just from water, that's from preventable diseases, that's from malnutrition, from a lot of different causes.
I do have to go, unfortunately.
Unfortunately. All right, so let me just ask you one more question.
Okay.
So we're talking about the moral obligation to go and help someone, a people, if you have some technology that can make them live longer or something of that sort. And I'm wondering, is that a moral obligation to the extent that human life is sort of relative, life expectancy, you know, 100 years ago, 200 years ago, they lived a shorter period of time, now they live a longer period of time. Do you think that living longer outweighs intrusion, or do you think that death is something which is always going to be striven against? Even today, we want to live 200 years. So is it really a solution to help people live 20 more years?
I mean, it depends on how old the person is. Like, if you're only your life expectancy until 40, you know that we can...
But I mean, life expectancy is very relative. That we say 100 years is, you know, it would be a good thing. But when we live to 50, 60 years was a good thing. So if we want to... So I'm saying we're applying our stent to them. Is that a good thing to do? Because isn't that a sort of a danger if we imply... if we imply one standard, are we going to apply all the standards and start to say, you know, you should learn about history and mathematics and things like that?
What would be dangerous about it?
Well, just the component of invading upon a culture and destroying it.
By increasing their life expectancy?
Yeah, well, like with the whale example, I mean, if a tribe, for instance, for generations upon generations has had a culture of, you know, moving around, migrating back and forth, depending on the seasons, and that's part of their culture. If you because water is low, if you dig a well for them, they won't have to do that anymore. They won't have to leave. Is that a good thing?
I guess if you raise the life expectancy, I mean, it depends on how much you want to leave. If they're in a dire need and this culture will be wiped out, then you should probably extend it. I mean, because it's just helping people. But also, like, if it's not, like, exactly dire, like, you don't want to, at the same time, you don't want to, you know, touch these people who have been, like, untainted for a long time.
But what if we were to compare this with individuals in this country where we are so obsessed with living for a long period of time, but often not as obsessed with making that life worthwhile? We're so fascinated with maximizing life expectancy. Do you think that life expectancy is more important than a certain amount of value to your life?
No. I think that whatever you do in your life, as long as it made you happy and you made the impact that you want to, then you can, however long it took is however long you need, kind of.
So this is kind of a hard one, but it's hard for you to put yourself in these footsteps, but if you had a choice, if you were you were a primitive, part of a primitive tribe in the middle of the jungle, if you had a choice to either live in that tribe and die younger, or if you could be pulled out of that, be influenced by outside forces and maybe go and be transformed into some institution where you go to school and you do these various things, but you get to live for a longer period of time. You know, you wear the clothing that they wear and you learn their languages and you slowly lose your culture. Which one would you prefer? Just to, you know, go about in the forest and die at 40, or, you know, live here in an institution?
Because I'm not that person.
Of course, but you're very imperfect, right. Albeit.
Okay, well, I mean, I guess if I had that choice, I would choose to live in the same tribe because I'd be abandoning people, things like family and friends and relationships that I've built and a life that I've built, and I wouldn't just give it up because I wouldn't really know what else is out there.
All right.
That's what I...
All right, we won't keep you any longer, but
okay.
You're...
How many views did we have? Just curious.
Can't be overheard. Hey! One person was extra.
So there's normally two? Like two, like probably like...
You can listen to that hair in you. You can say hello if you'd like.
Oh, okay, cool. Hello, one person. I hope you had a fun time.
You've been very enlightened, and now you're going to be in Nirvana because you're enlightened. All right, now we should have some more music.
Okay. Well, thank you, George.
Thank you, Will.
Thank you, Will. Yeah,
I'm sorry. Ross.
I
thought
it was
Ross. All right, all right.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
Nice Simon, right?
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I'll see you guys around.
All right. See you soon.
Peace
out. How's it going? Oh, it's all right. What about you?
I'm sorry
about what?
Oh, just about today.
Oh, no.
I didn't get back to you.
Oh, no. It's fine.
I've been, like, living on coffee.
Oh, really? Been
yeah,
writing a lot?
Actually, no, I've been dreading. And then wrote a little bit after spending 2 days just dreading whether I can get enough done.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's not, harsh. Not good, but...
That's harsh.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. I do it to myself.
Still harsh. Well, I know the simple things in life.
How are you doing?
I'm pretty good. I just have a ton of reading to do. That's why I was... Did you get my email?
No.
Oh, I was just saying I might... I was gonna thinking about just ending it, you know, right
oh.
now because
oh,
right. I have a lot of reading, but... And that's why I was... Sorry, I didn't get that.
I don't think that's the one about...